Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Huge week coming on ESPN Plus. Wednesday, Big Poppy meets and speaks with some of baseball's greats. We got the Players' Championship Thursday. We got great hockey coming your way Saturday. We got the prelims of the UFC Fight Night from the Apex in Vegas. To get ESPN Plus, go to ESPNplus.com or download the ESPN app. And as we welcome you back to another hour of Get Up Live at the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. Ninko, did you really go get your rings? Did you really go do that? Let me see.
Oh, hey, and you know what?
Them nice.
You know what finger to around. You know what finger around too, but I'm just keeping fist, okay? But there you go.
Listen, it's his birthday.
They damn show ain't come from Bill Belichick calling offensive plays. Okay. I know that.
We will talk more about this as we go. Meantime, I have to start with this. Did you see how this game ended last night? The madness of March is upon us. This is for a tournament bid. The SoCon Championship overtime tied at 61. Furman in Chattanooga. That's Furman's Mike Bothwell. They're up by two with 4 seconds left. Chattanooga has a timeout. They won't use it. Here we go.
Gene Baptiste with one. Heaves it for the win. Oh! Chattanooga with a game-winning shot in overtime and a shot he will never forget.
That sound is just the sound of March Madness when the announcers go, oh, that to me is exactly what this month is about in sports. David Gene Baptiste with an unbelievable shot. Look at the heartbreak for Furman and the glory for Chattanooga. An incredible moment. They're on their way to the NCAA tournament. Let's hope that every single night is as much fun as that one was. Meanwhile, today's a huge day in the world of pro football. It is a day we've had circled on the calendar, March 8th. It feels like for a very long time. 4 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon, the franchise tag deadline. And so there are big questions primarily in Green Bay. Will they tag Devontae Adams today? If they do, what exactly will that mean for Aaron Rodgers? Is he going to let them know before 4 o'clock this afternoon? Will this be determinant? Let's find out from Domofsky. Rob Domofsky covers the Packers for us so extraordinarily well. All right, Domofsky, again, it's a day we've been waiting for a long time. What are you hearing about what the plans are for this day?
Greeny, it was 42 days ago, which seems like 42 months ago in this Aaron Rodgers saga, when he said, look, there's this thing called the franchise tag that I don't think Devontae Adams wants, but it should be enough time for me to make a decision. He said, I don't want to be disrespectful to Devontae and the other free agents, and I don't want to leave the organization hanging. Well, as you said, it's franchise tag deadline day. That window opened on February 22nd. It closes today. If Rodgers doesn't make a decision by the end of the day today, he almost has to make one by the end of the week or at the very latest on Monday when that legal tampering period opens and then 2 days later free agency opens. He cannot wait any longer simply because the Packers are hamstrung until he makes a decision.
Can we just make it very clear for the audience that hasn't been following this every minute of every day that the Packers do not have any idea at this point what Rodgers is going to do, and perhaps no one else does either?
They are waiting, Greeny. They're waiting just like everybody else. They have a plan A and they have a plan B. One's with Rodgers. One, of course, is if he decides to either retire or ask for a trade. Now, as trade talks go, they may be receiving offers, but a source told me over the weekend, and I don't think this has changed, that they have not engaged in any of those trade talks and that their sole viewpoint is that they want Rodgers to be their quarterback this year.
Now, one more thing for you, Domofsky. Is there any question that they will tag Devontae Adams today?
Unless they get a long-term deal done by that deadline. If they don't, they will tag him. That does not necessarily mean he will play here this year, but they will tag him. And if Rodgers comes back, then Adams theoretically would want to come back, although not on that franchise tag. They would have to work out a long-term deal just because it would kill their salary cap, even worse than it is. And if Rodgers doesn't play here, then it's most likely a tag sign and trade situation with Adams.
Okay, awesome. Domofsky, again, it's going to be a very busy day for you there in Green Bay. We will come back with you. Let me bring the rest of my crew in here and get some perspective on this. So, Marcus, you just heard the latest there. We will know something on Devontae Adams in the next 7 hours. And with Rodgers, who knows? What is your perspective as you listen?
Yeah, that tag that you put on Devontae Adams don't make you safe. Like, the safety is going to come when Aaron Rodgers decides what he's going to do. And that may not be safe for the Green Bay Packers. They may have to look to start rebuilding and figure out what they're going to do after the era of Aaron Rodgers leaves. But ultimately, when we're talking about Devontae Adams signing a long-term deal, that ain't happening until he figure out what Aaron Rodgers is doing. I guarantee that. You are not going to have a receiver that's trending towards the Hall of Fame go into this part of his career not knowing if he gonna have a guy that can get him the ball at a high clip. And that's why these are directly tied. We can try to make ourselves feel good about these situations being separated, and Devontae is gonna work with on Devontae, and Aaron Rodgers is gonna do what Aaron Rodgers is gonna do. If you don't think that Devontae Adams is wanting to either know or already knows what Aaron Rodgers is going to do as far as the quarterback spot, you are out of your mind. And that tag don't mean nothing until Devontae Adams walk in that office and say, okay, let's get a long-term deal done because the quarterback decided to come back and he signed one. Or, like Domofsky just said, let's get this sign and trade cracking so I can go and play with a quarterback that can not only get me to rock, but have a chance to win a championship.
It is somewhat remarkable that it has taken to this point. Well, go ahead. You look like you want to jump in there.
The tag means something to the salary cap situation because he doesn't have to sign it for it to hit the cap. As soon as they tag him, another $20 million counts against their cap. So they have even more trouble. So they do need to figure out Rodgers and his contract and all this other stuff before next Wednesday when the league year opens. So I'm not saying Swagoo's point isn't correct. It's good. I'm saying it means something salary cap-wise, which is something the Packers are dealing with right now.
As I bring Ninko back in, let me make sure everyone's clear on all the dates and the times that we're talking about here. Today, 4 o'clock Eastern time, is the deadline for the franchise tag. Then Monday is when the legal tampering begins, right? That's legal when teams tampering. Can start talking to each other. The new league year begins in the middle of the day on Wednesday, and that's the moment in time in which everyone has to be under the salary cap.
What happens in legal tampering is teams can talk to agents about free agent contracts, and that's we'll see all the signings leak out there.
Right.
But, yeah, they have to be under the cap by 4 o'clock Eastern time on the 16th, next Wednesday, so they have to know what else they're doing in terms of cuts, restructures, signings, et cetera. That's when Rodgers has to have told them or as long before that as he can so they can get this other business.
That's the reason I wanted to lay that out. It's just the different mileposts that we have in place here. And then Rodgers, he may be on the verge of blowing through the first one of them. And again, that surprises me, even with him. Ninko, what is your take on all this?
Well, I think it's common sense that Aaron Rodgers is the biggest piece, and they have to figure that out because moving forward, if you sign or extend Aaron Rodgers, you do something with his contract, then everybody else on the roster is affected by how they're going to pay that out, if they're going to move him, what pieces do they get in the draft. Then they'll have more money for other guys. But then on the flip side of that, you know, you think if you're a receiver and say your market, you test the market, you're not getting what you want in return, and you say to yourself, okay, where can I go for 1 year and play with a quarterback that's going to maximize my value? Well, if Aaron Rodgers is not in Green Bay, they're not going to go and get some of these guys that say, hey, I need to go and prove myself for a year. I'm going to go wherever Aaron Rodgers is. So that affects their whole roster. So that's why figuring out where Aaron Rodgers is at and trying to get that thing set in stone is the biggest piece to this whole puzzle, and then the rest will follow. But it's going to be tough, and they need to make it known that they're doing whatever they can, and they've already done that, like Marcus said earlier in the show. They need to have Aaron Rodgers make a decision so they could figure out the rest of the roster.
All right, we will see. We are waiting, and the clock is ticking. And
this
today
is crazy.
At 4 o'clock Eastern time is the beginning of the process. Guys, sit tight. I will have much more on this as we go. We had a huge game in the NBA last night. Eastern Conference, Legler, come on over here. We got the Sixers and the Bulls last night, and that means Embiid and Harden back together again against a really good team in Chicago. And yet, this one was no contest, and it was James Harden doing his thing.
Yeah, dancing, and that's what he does. He gets you off balance, and he can either blow by to get to the rim, or he can shoot this step step back three, or he could drop off pocket passes and make the game easy.
They've just been together for whatever it is now, a couple of weeks, and look at the teamwork, how comfortable they already look together.
They integrated immediately the first time they played together. It looks like they've played together for several seasons. That's really honestly the most remarkable thing about this, because he's such a ball-dominant player, that usually takes time.
Look at Embiid working inside, and we saw that one spectacular drive for the slam. Then how about this one, the physicality?
Yeah, I mean, this is poor Tristan Thompson. I mean, just no help, not big enough. You're talking about a really good low post defender. Look how easily he displaces Tristan Thompson with that last power dribble and then the throwdown.
43 points and 14 rebounds for Embiid, and then you got Harden working it there to Matisse Thybulle, who's a nice piece for this team. He had 12. Harden had 16 points, 14 assists, 8 rebounds, and again, in a battle of two of the teams up near the top, the Sixers just were clearly the better team, which makes me want to ask you, with those two guys in place now and the nice pieces they have around them, Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybulle, etc., is Philly now clearly in your mind the team to beat in the Eastern Conference?
I think it's the highest ceiling because it's the most unique combination we have. I mean, these guys just overwhelm the matchups that are in front of them. You now can dominate any area of the floor. And I think, you know, I got a great stat this morning from Hembo who said these two guys, when they're on the floor together, are averaging 132 points per 48 minutes, their team. That's how their offense is operating when they play together, because they check every box. They can answer everything. And I think, to me, the biggest difference is James Harden represents such a threat as your primary ball handler. That's not what they had with Ben Simmons. That's why this looks so easy for Joel Embiid, and why it looks so easy for the role players, which is even more important, because James Harden will make the game easier for Embiid, but he doesn't need that much help in that regard. Those role players do. So ultimately, their season could hinge on the ability of those guys to make three-point shots. It's a critical part of it, but I just love the ceiling of what these two players bring.
Let's teach a little here, because you played in the league so long and you analyzed the game so well. The game changes, obviously, from the regular season to the postseason. The things that they do together, the things that will make Philly special, will they be more important or will they be diminished? I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, in the postseason, do they get better or do they get devalued?
With these two particular players, it's a little bit of each, and here's what I mean by that. So the game's going to get more physical. When the game gets more physical, that's going to benefit two guys that get to the line the way that they do. You're talking about two guys for their careers that make 7.5 free throws a night. It's the two highest in the league in the last 50 years, and now they're paired up together. So you can control a physical game because you're not only getting to the line with your physicality, you're converting. Those aren't empty trips. It allows you to set your half-court defense as well. However, Greeny, the caveat to that is both of these guys have a lot to prove in the postseason. Mm-hmm. They've had some moments in series in their careers where they were not at their best when their team absolutely needed them to be. That's still the final thing they need to answer. Can they do it round after round? And more importantly, within a series, in that 2-2 moment, game five, one possession game late, are you going to get it done then to get your team into a commanding lead in the series, move on from the series, and continue to do that? By the way, Doc Rivers has also had some issues in the postseason,
yeah,
blowing 3-1 leads. So those three guys together, that's the one thing that, to me, is still the biggest question. Can they handle the pressure of the expectations? Because there have been moments in the past where they have not risen to the occasion.
And it feels like a small window. Despite the fact that they've been together such a short time, they've been so good that the expectation will be championship or bust. You live in Philly.
Oh, of course.
It's title or bust in Philly right now, right?
No question. No question. This exceeds all expectation and excitement level I have seen with the Philadelphia 76ers, even going back well beyond the year that Allen Iverson took that group of guys to the finals, because I felt everyone felt that was house money that year, because you had to play the Lakers ultimately in the end of that. That's not the case here. The excitement in that city for this particular team, I mean, I tease my friends all the time, like they're already camped out on the parade route. They're waiting right now, and it's 2.5-3 months away. But that's how high the expectation level is for this group.
Last time that team won a championship, they had Moses Malone and Julius Irving. I'm not comparing these guys to that, but they've got the dynamic duo. Let's see if they are ready to do it. As we continue, the fuss about Russ. Are Russell Wilson's best days in Seattle behind him? Should the team be trading him right now? We'll talk about it. And then Legler will be back for this two nights after a huge game. LeBron James dealing with significant trouble in his knee. Are the Lakers in significant trouble in the West? We'll answer that question as we get up with you on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Pretty day here in New York. We'll call it Overreaction Tuesday, Graziano. I'm going to say something that I think people are generally saying, and then you tell me if that something is an overreaction. So okay. If people are saying the Giants should trade Saquon Barkley, is that an overreaction?
I think it's an overreaction because based on everything I heard in Indianapolis, I don't think they could get a whole lot for him, right? So he's going to make $7 million. If you're only going to get a fourth or fifth round pick back, I think the best way to do this is to keep him for one more year, see if he can stay healthy. They want to know everything they can know about Daniel Jones, put the best possible group around him. I don't think trading Saquon just to trade him is the right way to go.
Okay, fair enough. Next stop would be Arizona. If someone were to say Kyler Murray should not report for off-season work without a contract extension, would that be an overreaction?
Not an overreaction. I don't know why any of these guys report for voluntary off-season work if you have a contract and a job. But Kyler Murray in particular has struggled to finish the last couple of seasons fully healthy. He's looking for a contract extension. His leverage, as is the case with any player in his situation, is the threat of not playing or not showing up. Yeah, if I were him and I didn't have an extension by the time mini camp opened OTAs opened in April and May, I would stay home.
That's fascinating because the quarterbacks very seldom do that, as you know. But speaking of quarterbacks, here's one more. If someone were to say Russell Wilson will finish his career in Seattle, is that an overreaction?
I think it's an overreaction. I still think at some point there's a split coming. It might not be this year. Still might, but it would have to be initiated from his end. 2 years left on his contract. We'll see if they do an extension and prove me wrong, but I think at some point Russell Wilson is going to want to try his hand somewhere else, especially if things don't start to turn around quickly in Seattle. Hasn't really gone great there, you know, the way they're used to for the last couple of years.
No, and the division is so good. Well, look, yesterday on this program, Dan Orlovsky suggested he thinks that time should be now. Here's what he said Seattle should do with Russell.
I think the Seattle Seahawks should absolutely entertain trading Russell Wilson, but I think it starts at 3 first-round picks. The reality is this for Seattle. They're not a good football team, and they're not a good roster, and they're not going to be one for the next 2 seasons. Start that offer for 3 first-round picks and say, Russell's great, but we are not a good enough team to keep him on our roster and think we have a now and or a future.
That's an interesting sort of dilemma there. You could try and turn him into your Herschel Walker and get, you know, the huge package of picks and rebuild. But who knows who you're rebuilding around. Or you continue to ride this horse. Which would you do? You're trading Russell Wilson and starting over again if you're Seattle?
I'm not trading Russell Wilson unless they give you something crazy. But listen, like, if they don't have the roster now, what are they without Russell Wilson? Then you're literally just trading him off and saying, okay, for the next 2 to 4 years, we are absolutely terrible because there's no answer right now at quarterback anyway. So they don't have a quarterback on the roster. You have trust in that. You could say, okay, he's going to be better than Russell Wilson. And there's nobody in the draft that you could say, okay, we're going to move up to this spot and say he's going to be better than the option of having Russell Wilson on your roster. So to keep him on their roster, makes your roster a better and more competitive roster. Try and go out there and grab a few more pieces to make your roster better as opposed to letting the best player on your roster leave. Doesn't make sense to me.
No, and I hear you. The flip side of that, Marcus, is if you were to accept the reality that even with Russell Wilson right now, you're at best the third and maybe the fourth best team in your own division, that it is time to start all over again. And the best way to do that is to blow it up and use Russell Wilson to bring back. Dan just said 3 first-round picks. You can start rebuilding and then figure out the quarterback. Which of those strategies, Marcus, do you like?
I'm with Dan. If I can get 3 ones, I'm trading Russell Wilson. Listen, this is – breakups are hard, man.
And it just feels like this situation has been stagnant for a while. Like, we're not just getting into this conversation. Y'all remember last offseason, we talked about it. Russell Wilson gave a list of teams that he would entertain being traded to. So this is, it's not like everything is all right in Seattle. This is a situation where I think if this team doesn't make a big splash in this next couple weeks coming up, we could see Russell Wilson saying, yep, I need to go elsewhere. Our tenure has run its course. We've been to two Super Bowls, won one. It's been a successful time with Pete Carroll. But ultimately, what you're looking at right now with the Seattle Seahawks, you got a couple pieces. You got DK Metcalf, Lockett, and you brought over Jamal Adams. You got to make a lot of moves to that point in that particular division. So, look, rebuilds, don't nobody want to hear it. Everybody lost their mind when I said Green Bay need to get let Aaron Rodgers go and just start the process of becoming a good team once again. Yes, I know it's hard. Yes, I know you don't want to get rid of great quarterbacks, really good quarterbacks. The point of the NFL is to have a really good quarterback. But there are times when things have run their course. And I feel like if they're not there now, I feel like it's coming soon if they don't get something done in this free agent window and try to get this team better.
And Danny, you were just at the combine, which is where everybody sort of gathers and talks. Is the expectation, to Swaggoo's point, there was a list on the table last year of four teams. Three of those don't seem like options anymore. Is there a sense that Russell Wilson will be moved this offseason?
I think there's a sense that it could happen. It would have to be generated from him, right? He would have to sort of ask out, because right now Seattle is making it clear to anyone who asks that they don't want to trade him. Their head coach is 70 years old, right? He doesn't necessarily want to be in a position of starting over with a new quarterback. And then from Russell's end, you know, he's very appearance conscious, right? Like, he may not want to be the bad guy. He may not. Not everybody is wired the way Aaron Rodgers is, right? Where he doesn't mind turning heel.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of factors here that could keep him in Seattle. Again, I think it only happens if he forces the issue.
And then if he does, you know, all of a sudden start talking about moving, we start talking about all the likely places, the Philadelphias and the Pittsburghs and the Miamis, and all that comes into the conversation. We'll see if it goes that way. In the meantime, as we roll on a very busy morning, oh, what a difference a few days can make. LeBron James dealing with significant soreness in his knee after a big Saturday night. Are the Laker playoff chances in real jeopardy? We'll talk about it. Plus, a huge story from the NFL. Calvin Ridley suspended for gambling. Is the punishment too harsh? We're having that conversation, and we're doing this. Sneaky Hembo is ready for Graziano today, and here's the question. Which player has the highest career receiving average in Dallas Cowboys history? That's the question. The answer is next. You are watching Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, we are back, and here's the moment of truth. It is Graziano versus Hembo. We know the Cowboys are going into an interesting time in which some players may be coming and leaving.
Right.
Which player has the highest career receiving average in Dallas Cowboys history?
You know, I've missed Sneaky Hembo. He wasn't there. I was on shows last week wondering where's the
He was
tribute.
On vacation.
Right, so it's nice. I hope he enjoyed it, because he's not going to enjoy this. The easy answer is Michael Irvin. It's not going to be that. It's not sneaky enough.
Okay.
The current answer is Amari Cooper, which is also not sneaky enough, right? So my guess is Terrell Owens.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly right. Actually, here's the beauty of it. The other two names on my sheet of paper are Michael Irvin and Amari Cooper.
That's
they are
the top
next
three.
In line. The top three In yards per game as a Cowboy, T.O. is 1, Michael Irvin is 2, Amari Cooper is 3.
This is what happens when you take vacation.
You actually went, exactly
that's
right.
That's why I never do.
That's up, and so Graziano's up a field goal early on Hambo as we begin the 2022 campaign between these two. In the meantime, an entirely different kind of NFL story that I think has enormous implications, particularly in the times in which we live. Calvin Ridley, you probably saw this yesterday, longtime Falcons receiver, has been suspended for at least the coming season after the NFL released a statement saying that he gambled on games, including Falcons games, over a five-day stretch in November of last year. Now, during that time, he was on the non-football injury list addressing his mental health. He released a bunch of tweets yesterday in which he said, I bet $1,500 total, I don't have a gambling problem, and also otherwise said, I know I was wrong, but I'm getting 1 year, LOL, which suggests he thinks that's too much. Now, we know that in other sports, these things have been known to result in lifetime bans, most notably in the case of Pete Rose, but there have been many others as well. And so there's a lot of different ways to dissect this. But I'm curious. Marcus, let's make this point before we get to anything else. The moment you were drafted into the National Football League, in what ways is it made clear to you as a player the seriousness of any connection to gambling?
Yeah, you get drafted, and then a week or a few days later, you go to a rookie symposium. And it's one of the main talking points. One of the main talking points, along with how to manage your money, what to look for, like the vices and the things that can distract you while you're being a professional and playing in the league. But gambling is always prevalent because, like the league says all the time, the integrity of the game is jeopardized. The perception that guys are betting on something that they have involvement in the outcome is one of the worst things that you can do in the NFL based on how they look at it. Now, obviously, there have been situations that's way worse than placing a $1,500 parlay on your team when you're not playing, when you're away from the team. But ultimately, when we've had all of these conversations about the things, the shield and protect the NFL and how things look, this is one of those things where it's a hard line stance and it's non-negotiable. And I know what society is doing. I know how it's changed with gambling and betting. But the NFL and probably all these leagues ain't changing their stance on how they view guys betting on games, especially when you're a participant in that particular league.
So there's two different things that you bring up there that I think are both incredibly important to this conversation. Let's focus first off on the moment in time in which we live. These are rules that have been in place since the origin of sports. We live in a moment now where the NFL has a team in Las Vegas, which they never previously would have done, where they have business partnerships with a lot of these gambling sites and all the rest of that, and individual teams do, and things like that. So there is, and gambling is now legal in so many places and ways that it had not been before. So some people will look at that and say, the league should view this differently than they have in the past based upon the difference in perception and otherwise of gambling in our society today. Ninko, would that make sense to you? Do you think the one-year punishment based on that conversation is too harsh?
No, I mean, I'm from a different time in the early 2000s, and things weren't as accessible. So I didn't know anything about gambling. I thought gambling was, oh, you got to go to a casino or something. You look at your phone and there's an ad that pops up every 3 minutes about a gambling app or something that is more available to all these players. And I think that there needs to be more of an effort now, especially to make sure that these players understand. The symposium, the rookie symposium, yes, they do go over that. But also, you know, that's your rookie season. You know, if you play 5-6 years, things have changed drastically in our society in the last 3 years when it comes to gambling. So, you know, states are becoming, it's legalized in some of these states, some states are not. So you understand as a player, and I knew a long time ago, like, yo, you don't touch that. That's a terrible idea to do anything a part of gambling in the sport that you play in. But now the whole thing and the demeanor of gambling has been more accepted culturally now in 2022 than ever. So I think there need to be more of an effort to make sure that all these clubs and these teams, and they go out to the clubs, you sit down, you say, listen, this stuff is on your cell phone. It's popping up on your Instagram. We understand that. You can't touch it. Like, this is, look at this punishment. And I think that that's an example. They're making an example. Don't do this or you'll lose your livelihood.
I think that's it. So that would explain at least one of the reasons why you might be setting a significant deterrent. The other, and Jay Williams was in our studio about an hour ago, he brought up this idea, and I want to put Ryan Clark's tweet up there because he said something similar yesterday. Our buddy RC, he tweeted, the NFL and its leadership are full of bleep. You can be full of debauchery, discrimination, sexism, harassment, and evil, but as long as you sign the checks, you can investigate your dang self, then choose rather or not to reveal the findings. But you bet $1,500 and you know what? F it. So you can see RC is upset. He's obviously referring to the Dan Snyder situation in Washington. But what he's basically saying, I don't want to put words in his mouth, is we've seen a lot of things far worse than a $1,500 parlay that are dealt with far less harshly and severely by the league, and RC seems to have an issue with that. Dan, what would be the response to that?
I mean, look, there's a lot here. He's talking about how the league does or doesn't punish owners, and that's an issue. I mean, we've seen that. Obviously, there's a lot of opinion out there that Dan Snyder hasn't been punished strongly enough for what went on in Washington, and there's so much we don't know. So, I mean, that is a good point, but it is one of those incongruities that exists in the NFL. I mean, the owners run the league. To what Jay Will said earlier, right? I mean, he said, you know, domestic violence penalty is not as bad as this.
Right.
And that's true. There are layers to that, though, right? When they revamp the personal, I've talked to people at the league about this over the years, too. When they revamp the personal conduct policy, they consulted with domestic violence experts, and they said, well, what's appropriate here? Should we kick a guy out for this? And what the league says is their domestic violence experts told them, no, actually, that could be damaging to the families involved, the ability to repair relationships, you know, financial strain, et cetera. So everything is in its own kind of thing. Look, and the other thing you hear is, right, Brian Flores says his own team owner paid him offered to pay him to lose games. If they find proof that Stephen Ross offered to pay his coach to lose games on purpose, they need to kick Stephen Ross out of the league. We don't have that proof yet, but maybe it's out there. But this is a different bucket. It pertains to the game and how it is played and how honestly it is played. And this, you mentioned, I mean, it's more than 100 years ago, the Chicago White Sox, you know, through the World Series, and those players weren't allowed back in.
Right.
It's not new, and certainly this will send a message to remind guys they shouldn't be doing
it. He's talking about the 1990, that's known as the Chicago Black Sox scandal. Shoeless Joe Jackson is still banned from the game, and he's been dead for a very long time. Marcus, I'll give you the final word. Go.
I agree with what Nink and Graz said. But let's be real, and y'all know how I am. The reality is the league don't look at those other things as egregious. Unfortunately, we want them to, but how many times has the NFL told us those things don't matter to them as much as these type of things that transpire? I'm with you. I understand it, and I think it is wrong. Let me get that out there. But ultimately, this league has shown us time and time again that certain things are more important than other things. And when it comes to this gambling situation or betting, once you're a part of this league, they are going to take a hard line stance. I keep telling people, we want to live in this utopia, and we want things to be right. It's the age-old argument. Policemen should make more than we make on TV, or a basketball player, but they don't, because it is not viewed as the same. So I agree with what Graz and Nink said about the education piece of it, about what the league is, but we got to live in reality, and the reality is, and as bad as we think it is, and I believe it's bad and wrong, the reality is they don't look at that as being worse than what Calvin really did.
I have to leave it there for the moment. Again, it is, to me, an endlessly interesting and important topic, maybe now more than ever before, and we will continue to cover this as we go. In the meantime, what a difference a few days can make. LeBron James dealing with significant soreness in his knee after his huge Saturday night. Are the Lakers in real jeopardy of missing the playoffs? We'll answer that question next.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back on Get Up, and let me run the floor through some exciting and important NBA action as we head down the stretch here. Mavericks and Jazz, chippiness between Luka Doncic and Rudy Gobert in this game, and it would be Doncic who got the last laugh. He dropped 35, and the Mavs got a 111-103 win. Do not overlook his name in the MVP conversation. He's been great. Heat and Rockets, good to have that guy back. Victor Oladipo, his first game since April of last year, scored 11 in his return. Tyler Hero added 31. The Heat won it 123-106. And then the big story, the Lakers and Spurs. No LeBron. He had significant soreness in the knee after the huge Saturday night. It would be San Antonio that wins this game 117-110. Huge part of the storyline there. Greg Popovich ties Don Nelson's NBA record with his 1,335th career win. So with his next victory, he will be the all-time winningest coach in NBA history. But the storyline really is LeBron. Legler's here. And the great Jalen Rose gets up with us early this morning here. So, Jay, we were together Saturday night at Crypto.com Arena watching LeBron's performance. Legler was in the building as well doing the radio. Mm-hmm. And you immediately made the remark to me, they need that much from him just to win a game. So much that he can't even play the next game. What does that tell us about the Lakers at this moment in time, Jalen Rose?
That they need to be an idol, understand that they can get a huge game like that from LeBron James, try to pace themselves until Anthony Davis get back. And like Legs and I talked about yesterday, a healthy Lakers team, Greeny, once the playoffs start, would be trouble for the top of the Western Conference. I'm clearly not saying that they can compete with the Phoenix Suns. I think they're the overall best team in basketball. Once the Golden State Warriors get healthy, they'll fall into that conversation as well. But then when I start to look at Memphis, who's outplayed many of our expectations, they're a younger team. And if they started a playoff series against the Lakers, Los Angeles would have two of the best three players in the series. Obviously, Ja Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies is the other guy. Mm-hmm. And so that gives you a chance. And so based on that, that's why LeBron can have a 56-point game and then miss the next game because he's playing for the marathon at this point.
And so let's turn this into a little edition of NBA Countdown, if I can, with Legler here. So we have talked so much all year long about Russell Westbrook and where he fits into all of this. What is the right way? Because they should have three superstars on that team, at least by the names. Mm. And Westbrook clearly hasn't played that way. So, Legler, you're the coach. How would you utilize Russell Westbrook down the stretch and into the playoffs to make him an additive and someone who can help them pull off what would be a big surprise?
I don't think it's necessarily bring him off the bench because I don't know that he would mentally accept it. And now you're running a risk that you're bringing something else into this equation that really gives you no chance. So, listen, knowing that he's going to start the game, start the third quarter, and finish the game with LeBron James, that's about 15, 16 minutes probably. What about those other minutes? And I saw a sample of it on Saturday. I thought Frank Vogel did a nice job of getting LeBron out of the game when Westbrook then was given the ball. It was his show. And the first time it happened, the next three trips, he put his head down, he went to the rim, he got to the hole. He looked like Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City. True to himself as a player, he felt empowered. It was his team, his unit. So you've got to find those 12 to 15 minutes a night where he's out there when LeBron's getting rest to allow him to go be the alpha. But there's no way around the fact that you're still going to have him on the floor for long stretches with LeBron, and particularly when he closed games with a guy that doesn't really space it playing off of LeBron or AD. That's still going to be a problem for them.
And they don't have the kind of depth that they will be able to go a full second unit, all that. But, you know, Jalen, our buddy Mr. Wilbon constantly brings up that in the heyday of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, they would start and finish the game together. But then they would play long stretches apart from each other on the mm-hmm. floor. He always wanted to have one or the other on the floor. And Scottie would play a lot of time with the second unit. And it worked pretty well. They won six championships doing that. So, Jalen, does that feel like the option for them here? If they do that, what is the ceiling? What can the Lakers still accomplish through what has been a really disappointing year?
Greeny Legs is right. You have to stagger the minutes, and you got to allow Russell Westbrook to be the primary ball handler. That's the key. Russell is a rhythm player, and he's best when he's going downhill attacking in the paint. clearly when LeBron's in the game, he's going to be more of a spot-up player and a secondary ball handler. And late in games, Russell has to find a way to be a mover, a cutter, and somebody that's giving up good shots to get great shots. You understand and anticipate when the ball may get swung to you. And if you're Tim Legler and you're shooting over 52%, then you spot up and you knock it down. But if you Russell Westbrook and you see that ball coming to you, you got to start running towards the basket immediately. You can't get stuck with that shot and continue to play with the pace. And again, Greeny, like I said, for the Lakers, LeBron James has been dominant at points this year. Anthony Davis is a top 10 talent in the league. Russell Westbrook still had 20 points in the previous game. He's going to play hard. He's going to play with effort. And so having him engaged and having him in a position to be at his best at times when LeBron isn't in the game does give the Lakers an opportunity later in the season, depending on matchups, to be a long out for any team in the playoffs.
It's remarkable. I mean, you see it on your screen. They're 8 games under .500, and much like Brooklyn in the East, where, you know, they're hovering down there near the bottom of the standings, but they both still feel like threats. Julian, do I have a second to get to the Sixers here? Because I haven't gotten Jalen on this. For those who are just joining us, the Sixers, when they made their those first three games that they had Harden and Embiid together, a lot of people said, well, it's just the Knicks and all the rest of that. Now they go out and they really look dominant in a performance against one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference in the Chicago Bulls last night. For those just joining us, Legler, what do we say about the Sixers? Eastern Conference, Miami's been great, et cetera. What are the Sixers right now in the East?
I think there's five teams in the conversation, and I think their ceiling is the highest because I just think this is the most unique, dominant offensive combination that we have in the league because they can beat you on every platform there is, from deep, mid-range, at the rim, at the line. They control the game unlike any other combination of players. Now, they're going to have to play their best in some big moments when they get into the playoffs, and that's a legitimate question about these particular guys because you could go through their playoff history and say there's been moments they needed to be better for their team. So that's there. They have to answer that without question. But when you just look at how difficult it is to have the personnel and the scheme and the depth to be able to deal with these two guys and beating you up physically the way that they do, to me, this is the highest ceiling in the East.
So, Jalen, you have been on Milwaukee's bandwagon much of the year. You can always telling us not to forget about them, and I know you like what Brooklyn can be. So what are the Sixers coming off last night?
They are not the team to beat in the East. The Milwaukee Bucks are. You just said it. And they're hitting their stride at the right time. Just recently, their big three had 25 each for the first time all season. Just the other night, Drew Holiday had 16 points in the fourth quarter. Chris Middleton had 17 points in the fourth quarter and had 46 points. And Giannis fouled out that game. Bobby Portis has given them quality minutes up front. They added Serge Ibaka. They hope to get Brook Lopez back into the lineup as well. And again, the East has been a revolving door. And the Miami Heat also, Tyler Hero had a big game yesterday. They just brought back Victor Oladipo. There's something to be said for chemistry and for depth. And both of those teams have won the East recently. Miami 2 years ago, the Bucks last year. So I want to give those two teams the pole position over Philadelphia, but I'll have them right behind those squads right
now. And very quickly, you didn't even mention the Nets. I got 30 seconds. Are the Nets even in that conversation or not?
No, the Nets can't be in that conversation. They're barely in the playoffs. They're going to have to win two games to get in the playoffs to get possibly eliminated in the first round. We're not talking about them just yet.
I get it, but Vegas still has them as the favorite to win the East. 10 seconds.
They're still in the conversation because I just said it, so they're in the conversation. Okay, it doesn't take that much to get somebody in the conversation. That's all you got to do, Jay Rose.
Jalen, I will see you this weekend.
No,
thank you. And we got a star-studded doubleheader tomorrow night on ESPN and the app. Top teams in the NBA squaring off in our early. This is a good one. Suns and Heat. That could be a preview of the finals. And then we got Donovan Mitchell on the Jazz taking on Portland. Our coverage will start with NBA countdown. 7 Eastern. That's tomorrow night. And then the basketball conversation continues top of the hour here on ESPN with First Take. Are the Sixers now the favorites to win the East? Plus, did the NFL do the right thing suspending Calvin Ridley for the year? First Take's got Molly and Stephen A. and D. Wood and Tim Legler coming up top of the hour here on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, Champ Week continues tonight after the thriller last night. Horizon League title game is 7 Eastern tonight, and then the West Coast Conference Championship game, which includes the number one team in the country. All the action also on the ESPN app, so you can watch from anywhere. All right, as we finish up to today, again, we've been telling you all over again, March 8th is a day we've had circled on our calendars for a long time. It's franchise tag deadline. The overwhelming expectation is that Devontae Adams will be tagged by the Packers today. And then it will be Rodgers' turn. Aaron Rodgers to make his decision. So we're going to tell him what to do. We know he's watching. Aaron is watching. Let's tell him, should he stay in Green Bay or should he leave the Packers? Graziano, what should he do?
I think he should stay. I've always thought he should stay. I think it's a, you know, be careful what you wish for situation. It's gone well for him in Green Bay. He's in position to win every year. Hasn't happened in a while, but that doesn't mean it won't.
Ninko, should he stay or should he go?
He should stay right there with all the cheeseheads. I mean, come on. He's been there so long. Stay in one spot. Win another Super Bowl. Write your own story. But if you go somewhere else, you're going to find a, you're going to have to find a new mansion. You're going to have to find a new landscaper. All those things that just are really troubling and upsetting. Yeah. So just stay where you're at.
I love it. So, Swagoo, should he stay or should he go?
Get out. Get out now. It's time to start this new era in Green Bay, man. Listen, Aaron Rodgers has done as much as he could do. He's delivered for this franchise in the grand scheme of things. He's made tremendous strides. He's kept them visible. Get out, Green Bay. Start your new thing. Aaron, go start your new thing, man.
Ninko, that was very subtle, by the way. I noticed that you drank that with your Super Bowl ring showing. That's very well done. My pick will be he should leave because I'm a talk show host and I'm in the interesting business. That's I need interesting things to happen. Speaking of which, Swagoo, let's finish with this from our buddy Ryan Clark. He tweets, happy birthday to my dog, real life brother, a great friend, yeah, one of the best teammates on earth. Love you, Swagoo. From all of us at Get Up, you know that you are one of the OGs of this show. We love you. Happy birthday, yeah, Swagoo.
Much love, family. Appreciate y'all, man. Appreciate y'all. Love you, RC. Peace.
How old are you, Swagger?
39 years young, man. 40, again? We gonna turn up. We gonna do it
I've
in
been
New
turning
York
39
so
every year for
Number
a long time. Yes. Good one. First take now.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.